But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hi everyone and welcome back to The Wealth Show. I'm Zach Sharif, a senior reporter at Citywire Wealth Manager. And today we're talking about all things post-acquisition, integration and the challenges wealth firms face. I'm joined today by Carl Woodward, co-founder of Simplify Consulting. Carl, thank you so much for joining us.
Nice to meet you, Zach.
Lovely. In the wealth space, getting straight into it, we're constantly seeing, you know, not just M&A, we're constantly seeing business transformations, restructuring and rebranding. To kick us off, could you just tell us a little bit about Simplify Consulting and how you can address some of the challenges that wealth firms are facing at the moment?
Yeah, of course. So we've been going for 10 years, founded by myself and my partner, Kate Montserrat. And we've been operating in the wealth space predominantly for the entirety of our history. We work with clients of all different shapes and sizes and have a really unique perspective on some of the challenges that they face, from advice through to the platforms and the asset managers and the supporting kind of business process outsourcers and technology providers as well. And frequently we see some of those challenges around integration and how companies that have come together, merged, been acquired, become more efficient. And so we're really practitioners in helping some of those organizations transform their operating model and become more efficient so they can scale, become more efficient so they can deliver great customer service and look after their clients. And so we help help our clients closely by absorbing ourselves into those organizations, working really closely with key SMEs. We understand the businesses really well. We understand where the cost drivers are, where the revenue opportunities are. And so what we do when we're helping clients is give them a really clear roadmap and a transition plan for how they can get from where they are today to where they want to get to, and support them on that implementation journey so that they transform technology, they transform customer service, they transform their products and propositions and how they deliver service. And how they work with third parties as well. So we have a really comprehensive view and lots of tooling within our toolkit that enables us to help our clients.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I wondered if you'd be able to give me a sense of your client base in wealth management. You know, what kind of size firms we're talking about here. I'm interested to know what sort of demand there is for outsourcing at the moment.
Yeah, really interesting. And you'd think if you look back over the past 10, 15, 20 years, that the outsourcing and offshoring journeys that some of those companies have been on and through would have come to an end and we'd been through that cycle. But actually, over the past 2-3 years, we've seen a real push again for some of our clients to look at outsourcing opportunities. Now, we have clients who are the biggest asset managers in the UK, the biggest platforms in the UK. We have advice firms that are networks around the whole of the UK. We have some of the biggest outsourcers as well, supporting millions and millions of customers across the UK and the European markets. And still we see these opportunities for our clients to look at how they can run more efficiently as the margins are squeezed in their businesses. So how can they actually construct and create an operating model that's super efficient, that ensures they're focusing on the things that make a difference to them in terms of their competitive differentiators? So how do they deliver amazing service to their customers and advisors? How do they differentiate in that space rather than differentiate in the back office where some of the more commoditized functions just about doing them really, really well in the most efficient and effective way possible. So outsourcing is still attractive for that because it's that blend of really focusing organizations and particularly our clients on the things that they're great at, not the things that just need to be done really well.
Yeah, that's interesting. And coming in from, I guess you've got a unique perspective coming in as a third party. What would you say at the moment are the biggest sort of operational, or the most common rather, operational challenges that the wealth managers face that you can help with?
Oh, it's really interesting question, Zach. So There are so many. I think consumer duty has been really interesting as a suite of regulations. And if you speak to so many people, they'll say it's just what we should have been doing for the past 10 years, either through TCF or other kind of best practice. I think consumer duty is one where firms really need to get to grips with how they service their customers and treat people as individuals. And that's quite difficult in the retail wealth space. We know there's real pressure on being able to service customers in the most efficient and effective way possible and their advisors, and to do that through digital capabilities and to do that with a personable service, potentially with some AI as well. But I think consumer duty has really created that emphasis on firms to not treat everyone as the same, and to actually treat people as individuals and tailor some of those propositions, products, service delivery across channels in such a way that actually makes customers feel like they have a trusted relationship. Because I think in wealth, when you're giving people money and you're asking them to invest it on your behalf and you're trusting people to look after that money, that concept of trust is fundamental. So what we try and do with the organizations that we support is help them design really efficient processes in their operations teams, processes that are customer oriented, advisor oriented, that deliver value for both parties, not just to the organization itself, but to the customers that they're supporting. And we do that in such a way that drives efficiency, but flexibility, and really tailor some of those processes to customer needs and wants.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's interesting they're talking about their clients really as the focal point. And you know, that's we're experiencing a sort of slowly, but we are experiencing a wealth transfer, and you know, clients are changing and their needs are changing. I'm interested to see what your thoughts would be on the sort of cultures of the wealth firms that you work with, because that reflects how not just how they treat their client, but how they accommodate for their clients, and how, you know, they use different ways of working and techniques to sort of, you know, keep them at the front of mind. Do you find any kind of challenges overcoming, particularly maybe sort of larger, older wealth firms?
It's really interesting, actually. Some of the larger, older wealth firms, and some of these are our clients, are really customer oriented, really focused on delivering great customer outcomes through delivery of traditional services via traditional channels. We're also seeing some of our clients leveraging AI and technology really innovatively as well to help drive efficiency, but also help drive better customer outcomes and flexibility and choice. And I think what's really interesting is the culture of those organizations, whether they're very traditional or very innovative, actually all still put the customer and the advisor at the heart of their proposition and want to do the right thing. I don't think there's any organization out there that is a race to the bottom trying to just onboard as many customers as they possibly can, as cheaply as they can. I think there's a genuine will and desire. And I think we've been through some difficult periods during COVID and through the pandemic. But I think increasingly, our clients are focusing on that customer experience and wanting to do the right thing. And I think the cultures support that. I think the cultures are very much customer oriented. And we see a lot of focus on, you know, we talked about outsourcing earlier, and traditionally there's that tendency to try and outsource as much as possible to run a really low cost operation. Most of the customers we speak to don't want to outsource customer contact. They think it's their differentiator. They think it's where they can build those relationships with customers and advisors and provide really great service that sets them apart and builds a reputation and stickability in terms of long-term relationships. So for us, I think we're still seeing cultures that are very much customer-oriented, and that can only be good in the context of consumer duty.
Yeah, thank you. That makes sense. And you know, speaking of consumer duty as well, you know, the FCA is doing so many reviews right now. There's so much change coming our way. I'm assuming that as regulatory pressure increases, you're seeing more demand for your services, particularly among smaller firms.
We are, yes. And what's nice about us is we don't have a threshold of the type of client that we deal with. So we'll deal with one man band advisor firms, small advisor firms, networks, big asset managers, big platforms, and we can help organizations different shapes and sizes because we have some quite commercial flexibility, and we're really flexible at how we engage and the models that we adopt and use. I think in terms of consumer duty and the regulatory environment, obviously there's a there's been a desire from the government to drive the regulator towards more growth objectives and less about rules and regulation. We're definitely seeing some of that activity play through in terms of some of the consultancy engagements that we're being asked to support on. So how do we actually help some of our clients adopt things like AI? How do they use the FCA sandbox to actually test and learn about the value that AI can bring to their businesses to help drive growth, to help look after customers' money more safely, to help ensure customer outcomes are achieved more frequently? And so we definitely see demand in that space, not necessarily just about compliance and rules and regulations, although there's obviously still a big part of what the FCA do and it's still a big part of what the industry needs to make sure it's adhering to. But I think there's definitely been a balance and a switch between let's also talk about growth and enablers for growth around innovation and technology, not just about making sure that we're following the rules.
Yeah, and AI is one of those complex areas where all the sort of trendy wealth managers that claim to have a grip on it. In your experience, do you think that businesses have that nuanced understanding? Because of course, the regulator's got to regulate for this as well, so they've got to try and have that understanding and develop that regulation and get that through. But do you think businesses are have that at the moment on the whole?
It's interesting, Zach. It must be one of the topics you talk about the most at the moment, isn't it? AI, it must be a really popular subject. I think where we see it working best is where clients identify a problem and then work out whether AI is the right solution. And in some cases it is, and in some cases it isn't. I think there's been a tendency, particularly in some organizations, to want to implement AI without really understanding the problems they're trying to resolve by using it. It's almost, where can we deploy AI? Where's it going to add value to us as a business? Rather than, here are our challenges, here are the opportunities. Can AI address some of those? And can it do it in a really safe way, within a suite of guardrails and within a governance framework that actually works for us and protects our customers? So I think the FCA is very interested in how organizations are adopting AI, how they're using it, and in which areas they're using it. We've seen it been tested and used in some advice journeys, which is really, really interesting. And ultimately, if that results in better outcomes for customers, more consistent outcomes, and it drives the industry towards better adherence to the rules and regulations and ensure that actually customers are getting the right level of service at the right time, that can only be a good thing if AI is facilitating that. I think where we'll have to draw the line and the boundary is being really careful about at which point AI is making decisions or at which point it is inferring decisions based on something that it's learned previously, and the rigor and the wraparound services we put around that to make sure that actually there is human intervention, because the most important thing is still that human experience, human trust and human relationship that underpins any kind of technology enablement.
Yeah, that makes sense. And coming back to M&A, the challenge of integrating acquisitions has been, made sort of more prescient with Consumer Duty as well. Would you mind pointing out sort of some of the challenges firms face? We cover all the, as a journalist, you often cover things that go wrong, and a lot of things that do go wrong are integrations, particularly of large wealth management firms. And it's interesting just trying to get under the hood and understand what those challenges actually are. It's not as simple as bolting businesses together, and how long that process can take. I mean, you describe a sort of range of service, a range of clients that you have, from platforms to wealth managers as well. So I appreciate that those can vary. Replatforming is a huge, huge undertaking. But just on the wealth side, would you mind explaining sort of the biggest challenges that wealth firms have integrating their businesses?
Yeah, and I guess it's frustrating, isn't it? Because often we only ever hear about the disasters in the press and not necessarily some of the good news stories about firms that have done a really fantastic job of integrating, replatforming technology, bringing people together, consolidating operations, offering better products and propositions to customers because they've got, a broader capability now through an acquisition or a merger. I think some of the challenges are specifically around timescales and the amount of time it takes to often transition technologies, estates, simplify them, migrate data from one system to another system. And sometimes those can be multi-year projects. And it's very difficult in this day and age to have an executive leader who's willing to put their kind of career on the line and be in role long enough and be disciplined to see a migration and a transformation through. That's why often I think there's a reluctance to commit to those multi-year programs, because inevitably they take time. Building out capabilities and technology takes time. I think what's been the real sea change in the past year and two to three years now is we now see technology estates that are far more configurable, far more flexible. Software as a service and business process as a service is a really fundamental operating model design now, which enables firms to move onto new technology stacks in a very different way than they did in the past. If you went back 10, 15, 20 years, the reason some of those transformation projects took 3, 4, 5 years and still didn't deliver is because you were creating new functionality, new technology, writing new code on legacy systems that just weren't designed for to be scaled up in that way. We now have some really great examples of wealth tech and fintech that is actually very, very highly configurable and enables firms to very quickly set up new products and new propositions and migrate data using AI and using repeatable methods in a far more efficient way than we ever did previously. So I think those multi-year change programs are less prevalent. I think there's a huge opportunity now for executive leaders to commit themselves to a transformation project that delivers the integration value that you have to look for. That's, you know, if you're going to buy businesses, you're going to merge businesses, you've got to get those efficiencies, those scale efficiencies through the business, through, you're going to get the AUM, but how are you going to drive that business through one technology stack, through one operating capability, through, you know, a more efficient way of running a business. That revolves some difficult decisions around migrating onto technology solutions that are scalable and flexible and modern. But those companies can do that now in a much more efficient way than they ever could in the past.
Yeah, and tech is an interesting point, because I mean, it's not just AI. We've seen the wealth industry be pretty antiquated in terms of technology relative to other sort of sectors. Is that something that you've experienced? I mean, you know, it's not just something as simple as going paperless, but it's you know, it has been a proper challenge that a lot of firms have faced, just having pretty archaic tech, which you can no longer sort of survive in a competitive environment. Is that something you've experienced?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the strength of the ecosystem is now much greater than it's ever been before. So I think in the past, there was a tendency for organizations to build their own technology. And very quickly, that became unsustainable, because with the level of regulatory change, legislative change, customer demand that came through, firms, and some firms still make a success out of this. So this isn't a kind of a one size fits all approach. But historically, firms were invested a lot in their own IT development capabilities. They would have potentially had coders and developers sat there building out a tooling. Unless you continually invest, unless you continually evolve, that technology quickly becomes quite redundant and to your point, legacy. I think where firms are seeing now is when they design their IT architecture, they may have their own core systems, but they're integrating with other parts of the ecosystem. So they'll be connecting to messaging hubs, to FX providers, to banks, to correspondence engines, to specific calculators, underwriting engines. They'll do all of those things because they'll use best of breed solutions that already exist in the market, rather than building out their own solutions themselves and replicating what other companies are much better at doing. So I think we're seeing that approach to the building an IT ecosystem to be very different now than it was 15, 20 years ago. And again, that plug and play architecture and solution design enables companies to really rapidly create propositions and products and deploy them really, really quickly in a way that they could never have done 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And leading on from that, I wanted to ask you the sort of about the challenges of simplifying businesses as well, because, you know, particularly when you've had a sort of legacy business that has been made through mergers and acquisitions over the last 10 years, there can be so many different systems at work. I mean, that's not even considering Some of the platform work that you must do, where, you know, there's wealth firms as well have, you know, can use so many platforms at once. What are some of those challenges, and is it difficult sometimes going into firms and sort of asking them to scrap certain things?
Yeah, it's a good question, Zach. I think some of the legacy comes from proposition and product design in the past. And I think some of that proposition product design, if you think about things like you know, special deals that used to be offered and how they were hard-coded in systems and how products were administered in the past, is very different to how they're administered today. And so when you look at certain product wrappers, so, you know, the majority of platform businesses have an ISA or a GIA, they'll have some kind of a SIP, they might have an onshore bond or an offshore bond, they might have a junior ISA, they might have a LICE. Some of, in the past, that would have all been hard-coded into systems and really, really difficult to roll back and to simplify. I think now, because we're in this world where technology has come on such a way that actually you configure systems to launch new products really quickly. So when the Chancellor stands up and announces there's a whole new Great British ISA, I think this time last year we were talking about, and how that would practically be administered, that's not so scary now for firms, because it's not that difficult to launch those new propositions on modern technology solutions. So actually, I think those companies that do carry the legacy of the past, they've got some really complex annuity books and, you know, with profits funds that are quite difficult to administer, some quite complex rules, that's difficult to address. And migrating from legacy technology solutions onto new solutions is not always that easy. But I think firms now appreciate they need to go on that journey. They need to embark on that journey. And when they do, they then realize the benefits.
Yeah. And what about brand identity as well? You know, that's something that firms are thinking about all the time. And, you know, we only had, I think it was last week, we had Waverton and London Capital's W1 Emery brand. Because it's interesting speaking to you as a co-founder of a business, because your business works with many different things and many different clients. So does that require, you know, a sort of a completely different way of thinking?
Ah, that's a really interesting question. I think the consolidation is happening, right, across the wealth sector. We're seeing platforms merge. We're seeing platforms being acquired, seeing wealth managers merge and be acquired. The trust in the brand is just so important, isn't it, in the industry in which we operate in. You know, having that faith that your money is invested in the right place, that what your company is telling you about its ESG credentials, about how it invests, how it behaves, is just so important. And I think brand is such an important part of that. I think there's such a focus. I always talk about it in respect to the banks, who, you know, the banks in kind of society have always been the bastion of kind of great reputations, trusted partners for looking after your money and having relationship managers. And they have such a great opportunity in wealth to extend that from savings and current accounts and mortgages and loans into investments and investment products and advice journeys. And I always think that if you've got that strong reputation and that trusted brand, it's such a easy win then to onboard and win new clients, because you can evidence that you've got the history and you've got the background to be able to really, really be trusted in that role. I think that's really important as more and more organizations consolidate and more acquisition takes place, that those brands can stand on their own two feet.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. And lastly, Carl, while I've got you, I just wanted to ask you about the acquisition market from your perspective, because, you know, you're obviously seeing, you know, firms doing a lot of them. And I wanted to ask you how firms are behaving with their acquisitions, and whether that's changed, because obviously we've seen loads of changes in the market, and an ever present sort of consolidation. So I just wondered if firms are behaving differently about their acquisitions now, sort of in light of Consumer Duty, and what their approach is to integrating businesses.
I think so what's driving acquisition? AUM, obviously. The more assets under management you get, the more the more revenue you can generate. I think vertical integration is still really, really important in the industry, and that's driving a lot of the acquisition activity as well. Companies recognizing that companies recognizing that they need to increase margins, and in a really depressed market where it's really difficult to generate generate significant margins from one part of the value chain, means you need to look at other parts of the value chain. So if you're charging an advice fee but you haven't got a platform, or if you're charging an advice fee and a platform but you haven't got the assets, so you can't get the asset fee, the fees from the underlying funds, you've got to go and find ways of actually being more vertically integrated, and that's driving a lot of acquisition activity. Now that alone will increase margins and you'll get a bigger piece of the pie, but unless you integrate, I think there's very real risk that you leave out a lot of the cost base that you've inherited, and that still makes you unsustainable and potentially not scalable. So I think there is a real driver now and a real attitude towards integration. You're going back to the start of this conversation. We're definitely seeing firms recognizing if they don't integrate, they may obtain greater revenues and greater margins from fees. But what they won't be doing is addressing the deficiencies in their cost base. And we know the cost at the moment is such an important aspect of an organization's ability to thrive and grow and develop and win business.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that seems like a fantastic note to end on. Carl, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Zach.
You've been listening to The Wealth Show with myself, Zach Sharif. Today I was joined by Carl Woodward from Simplify Consulting. For any questions, please feel free to email us at wmnews@citywire.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Today is VE Day. The boys
the newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing
landed.
Down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth: cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.